Welcome to Today on Broadway for Friday, April 5th, 2024. I'm Broadway Radio's Matt Tamanini. I'm going to run you through the news by myself today, but I did not want to subject you to yet another show of just my voice. So after we run through just a little bit of news and a couple recommendations, I am going to take you into an interview that I did earlier this week with the composer of one of the most highly anticipated and buzzed about shows of this Broadway season, Limpica, Matt Gould. Matt and his co-writer Carson Kreitzer have been working on this show for 14 years, and it is finally on Broadway. Matt and I discussed the evolution of the show, where his co-writer Carson kind of came up with this idea, what the incredible Eden Espinosa brings to the role of Tamara de Lampica, and so much more. So stick around for that after the news, but let's dive first into the very first set of nominations of this New York Theatrical Awards season, and those come from the Lucille Lortel Awards. Speaking of Lampica, they were announced by two of the show's stars, Amber Amman and George Abboud. Now, these are specifically off-Broadway awards, and the season for the Lortels goes from April 1st of 2023 through March 31st of 2024. There are some other conditions for shows to be eligible for that, which I'm going to get into here in a minute, because there are some notable shows that do not have any nominations, and I think I figured out mostly why that is, but we'll get to that here in a few minutes. The shows that led the nominations first were Wet Brain with 8 nominations, Buena Vista Social Club and Stereophonic both with 7, and then Prey and Dead Outlaw with 6 apiece. I'm going to run through the major nomination categories, but you can find the entire set of nominations in the show notes if you would like. In the Outstanding Play category, the nominees are The Comeuppance by Brandon Jacobs Jenkins, Plays for the Plague Year by Susan Laurie Parks, Primary Trust by Ebony Booth, Stereophonic by David Ajimi, and Wet Brain by John J. Caswell Jr. The Outstanding Musical nominees are Prey, Buena Vista Social Club, Dead Outlaw, Hell's Kitchen, and Teeth. Outstanding Revival, which is both plays and musicals, are Danny and the Deep Blue Sea, I Can Get It For You Wholesale, Philadelphia Here I Come, Sunset Baby, and Translations. Outstanding Solo Show, the nominees are All the Devils Are Here, performed by Patrick Page, I Love You So Much I Could Die, performed by Mona Pernow, Make Me Gorgeous, performed by Wade McCollum, Sorry for Your Loss, performed by Michael Cruz Kane, and Triple Threat, performed by James T. Lane. The Outstanding Director nominees are Daniel Oyken for Stereophonic, David Cromer for Dead Outlaw, Nietzsche Douglas for Prey, Eric Ting for The Comeuppance, and Dustin Wills for Wet Brain. Outstanding Choreography, the nominees are Camille A. Brown for Hell's Kitchen, Graciela Danielle and Alex Sanchez for The Gardens of Annuncia, Patricia Delgado and Justin Peck for Buena Vista Social Club, Nietzsche Douglas for Prey, and Roger Feather Kelly for Teeth. Outstanding Lead Performer in a Play, this is a gender-neutral category, so the nominees are Christopher Abbott for Danny and the Deep Blue Sea, Gabby Beans for Jonah, William Jackson Harper for Primary Trust, Nicole Ari Parker for The Refuge Plays, Josh Radner for The Ally, A.J. Shively for Philadelphia Here I Come, and Paco Tolson for The Night of the Burning Pestle. Outstanding Feature Performer in a Play, Arnie Burton for Dracula, A Comedy of Terrors, Eli Gelb for Stereophonic, Carmen M. Herlai for The Apiary, Florencio Lozano for Wet Brain, Julio Mange for Wet Brain, Bubba Wheeler for Swing State, and Frank Wood for Toros. Outstanding Lead Performer in a Musical, again, gender neutral, Natalie Venetia Belcon for Buena Vista Social Club, Jeb Brown for Dead Outlaw, Andrew Duran for Dead Outlaw, Santino Fontana for I Can Get It For You Wholesale, Priscilla Lopez for The Gardens of Annuncia, Elise Allen Lewis for Teeth, and Malaya Joy Moon for Hell's Kitchen. Outstanding Feature Performer in a Musical, Shoshana Bean for Hell's Kitchen, Roderick Covington for Rock and Roll Man, Keisha Lewis for Hell's Kitchen, Jessica Malasky for The Connector, Stephen Pasquale for Teeth, Mel Simi for Buena Vista Social Club, and Tom Sesma for Dead Outlaw. Outstanding Ensemble goes to Prey, The Comeuppance, and Flex. Again, we will have all of the nominations in the show notes if you would like to check out some of the design categories. The honorary awards were already announced for this year, but just as a reminder, the Lifetime Achievement Award goes to Ruben Santiago Hudson. The Playwrights Sidewalk inductee is Dominique Morisseau, and the Outstanding Body of Work Award goes to Ars Nova. In terms of the shows that you will not find on this list, there were 3 that jumped out to me, so I reached out to the Lortel Awards just to get clarification as to what the requirements were to be eligible for these awards. The show had to have a union off-Broadway league agreement with all the major unions, Actors Equity, stage directors and choreographers, so on and so forth. They had to do 28 performances, including previews, in a 76-seat to 499-seat venue in Manhattan, and it has to be a member of the Off-Broadway League. If you look at certain shows, and some of these things were difficult to pin down, so I don't want to say specifically that this is why some things weren't included, but going back to last year, it would have fit in this season, but that uber intimate loft version of Uncle Vanya, I don't think that they had 76 seats, so I don't think that's why that qualified. Illinois, I don't believe that even with their two-day extension that they had 28 performances by my counting, and there could have been days because... And their calendar is gone from the Parker Avenue Armory website, so I couldn't exactly confirm, but I think it was actually closer to like 23 or 24, so that would explain that. The one that I'm not exactly sure on is Oh Mary. It's actually playing at the Lucio Lortel Theater, so I would imagine that that would meet all of the Broadway League and union requirements, so I'm not sure what that is all about, why that one was not included. Maybe it was eligible and it just didn't get any nominations. I would find that hard to believe, but I was curious about those shows, and I'm sure there's many others, but hopefully if there is something in your mind that you're wondering why it wasn't included, perhaps that answers the question. The next news came from the New York Times, and it is that the long-serving president of the Actors Equity Association, Kate Schindel, will not seek re-election, meaning that her 9-year tenure in the role will end on May 23rd. Schindel told Michael Paulson of the New York Times that she was stepping away to focus more on her acting career. The president's position is unpaid and as a volunteer, so Schindel said that because of all of the responsibilities to being Actors Equity president, she did not have enough working hours to get the union's healthcare. So she is going to take a step back. She said she will still continue to be involved with the labor movement, especially with her union, but it will be time for someone else to take over the reins moving forward. All right, I have a few recommendations here. First, they did a little minute and a half music video with the cast of Stereophonic performing the song Masquerade from the show. It's fantastic. Check it out. And then you might have seen on social media last week, Aladdin celebrated its 10th year on Broadway, and they did a ton of really fun stuff with the show. They had cameos from the original stars, including Adam Jacobs, James Monroe Iglehart, Courtney Reed, Jonathan Freeman, and they put out a bunch of videos with all of that stuff. So I will link those in the show notes and you can check them out there. All right, before we get into my interview with Matt Gould, let's talk about our sponsor for this week, BetterHelp. I don't know about you, it is the end of the week and I am exhausted. I just want to curl up on the couch and take a nap for a couple hours, a couple days. I don't know, a couple weeks. That is not possible because of all of the work that I have to do, family commitments, and I am coming up to New York next week. So I'm not going to be able to nap for nearly as long as I would like. However, anytime I get feeling this way, I know that I need to take a step back and realize that I can't do it all, or I can't do it all at the same time, and I need to make sure that I'm taking care of myself and giving my body and my mind and my heart time to recuperate. And as you head into a very, very busy spring for many, many people, whether you are working on Broadway, whether you are going to a bunch of Broadway shows, or if you live out in, you know, Arizona and you just have a ton of extra stuff on your plate as the seasons change, it's important to make sure that you're checking in on your social battery and you're not running yourself ragged, you're not running yourself down. Give yourself time to recharge and recuperate. Therapy is a great way to make sure that you are taking stock of what's important to you and what's going on in your life. Therapy, after all, is designed to empower you to be the best version of yourself, and you can't do that if all you ever want to do is nap, although there is nothing wrong with a nap here or there, I must say. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely done online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited for your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a very brief, non-intrusive questionnaire, and you get matched with a licensed therapist. They send you the information, you find out what their focus is and what their approach is, and if it works for you, you set up your first appointment. But if you aren't vibing with that therapist, you can change at any time at no additional charge. So, find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Broadway today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Broadway. As you all know, Limpica is in previews over at the Long Acre Theater and will assuredly be one of the shows to keep an eye on during the Tony Awards season. Cannot wait to see these reviews coming up on the 14th. So, without further ado, here's my conversation with the show's composer, Matt Gould. All right, so I first heard Eden Singh woman is, it was over 4 years ago because it was pre-pandemic, in a concert at Green Room 42. And I have been telling everybody who will listen, and probably some people who have no interest in listening, about how excited I am for this show ever since then. So I cannot even imagine what the process of getting Limpika to Broadway has been for you. Many, many years of development, multiple productions. You are now, we're talking, you are in the theater. It looks like in either a closet or a dressing room. I can't tell.
This is our music director charity's dressing room. Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay. So now that the show is on Broadway, you open in a week and a half, or a little less than 2 weeks. What has this journey been like?
It's an insane journey. It's an utterly insane journey. You know, as you said, the show has been in development for 14 years. And I say this with like humility, in this climate, in this sort of economic climate, a show about a bisexual Jewish woman painter whose name nobody knows how to say, Limpika, is a really, really, really tough bet. It's a really tough bet. And simultaneously, I think we're in this time where we need stories that that shake us up, that move us, that give us a new way to look at the world and to see the world around us. And so it's both deeply terrifying to be here and to feel like my soul and life's work is on the line, and also just deeply thrilling to be here and to get to watch audiences responding to something that I think for a lot of people, they're like, I don't know what that is. I don't know what I'm walking in to see. You know, there's 10 other shows I could see with, you know, names that I recognize and music that I know. And this one is something different. And it's very moving to watch people feel moved by it.
You said the show's been in development for 14 years. For people who haven't kind of heard the story of the origin of this musical, when you and Carson first started coming up with the idea to work on this, what was the seed of an idea as to, oh, this person who, as you just described, not normally the center of a musical, would actually make something that would be impactful in that form?
Yeah, well, it was Tamara de Limpika's work. Carson Kreitzer, who is the brilliant playwright who showed me this art book and was like, what do you think? It's a musical? And I looked at this art and I said, oh my God, what dude made these paintings? And she was like, yeah, not a dude. Her name's Tamara de Limpika. And if, you know, I could rattle off 10 male, artists whose names we learn, whose work we learn in school, and I'd be hard pressed to come up with one or two women. And I just looked at the work that Limpika had created, this work that has this very like polished, curated, perfect kind of veneer, where the humans in the work almost look machine-like. They look almost like a highly touched up Instagram photo. And then you look in their eyes, the eyes of these people, and you see that there is this longing, this life, this pain, this fear, terror inside of them. And it was that juxtaposition between the perfect curated outside and the tumultuous inside that, for me, I was like, this is the kind of tension that a musical needs to have, where you have a character saying, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good on the outside. And then they sing their song and you learn, I'm dying, I'm crying, I'm in pain on the inside. That is what makes to me a thrilling piece of theater, a thrilling piece of music, when we get to reveal something about someone that is different than what they're telling us about who they are. And so it just immediately, I heard music in my head, seeing those paintings, and here we are.
And so you heard music seeing those paintings, but the songs that have been released, I'm seeing the show in a week and a half, so I haven't heard all of the songs yet, but you guys released three songs ahead of time, kind of as individual tracks or an EP or whatever. Then you did the kind of the press preview on the stage at the theater, which was awesome. And I think more shows should do that. So there's a few more songs out there. And while they all feel, at least for me, only having seen some of them, cohesive, they all have a very different sound. So as you are approaching this score and hearing this music in your head and you start to dive into all of the other characters outside of just the paintings, what is the general vibe for the music that you wrote? If you're saying, this is the story we're telling, this is why these types of songs make sense.
I sort of call the style of this show industrial romantic. And what I mean by that is that, you know, there is a kind of metallic quality to a lot of Lempicka's paintings. So there is this kind of theme of metal and girt steel and machinery is sort of part of the ethos of her work and of the world of this show. And then there's also this sort of tension between that, this sort of mechanized, perfect, machine-like world, and then this very human, flawed, messy world. And it really is the sort of like the conversation between those things, the conversation we're having now between like AI. You know, in the next 10 years, we're going to have a musical written by artificial intelligence. It's going to happen. And it will become, it's becoming a question of our time as it was in other ways during Lempicka's time. What is the way forward? Is it through perfection and mechanization and having everything automated and perfect? Or is should we be leaning into humanity and the messy realities of love and loss and just what it is to be human, which is deeply imperfect, deeply flawed? And so the music is a conversation between those two things and everything in between those two things. Just how can humanity and perfection live next to each other? And can they at all?
There's a lot going on in what you just said about that music, and it takes a pretty stellar actor or cast in general, but especially an actor to kind of communicate that in the music. And you are led by one of the best and somebody who I feel like a lot of us have known and loved for decades, but probably hasn't had the acclaim that she rightly deserves. So I know there are other people who have played Lempicka over the years in different iterations of the show. And I've talked to Eden about that in the past too, but like the fact that Eden Espinosa is leading this show on Broadway for a theater fan of my age, that excites me beyond belief. Somebody who wore out my CD of Brooklyn, 20 plus years ago. What does she bring to this role that allows you as a writer and the audience watching to kind of unlock all of that depth in that character?
Yeah, Eden brings humanity. She first of all, has a crazy, insane instrument that is able to just achieve just ridiculous pyrotechnic authority. But she brings a humanity to it that I think is often these days not celebrated, where we have turned musicals in a lot of ways into these machines that have to run. They have to run for 10, 15, 20 years. That's the goal. And so you have to be able to plug in, you know, when that actress is done, you got to be able to plug in the next actor and then the next actor. And I get it. That's just part of that's how Broadway works. And God willing, that will be the reality for our show in some form. The mold for how this is done had to be laid by an actor who could be both actor and extraordinary vocalist. Billy Porter and I used to talk about this. He's a friend of mine, and you know, for a long time there was this sort of debate between like should we have singers first and actors second, or should it be, you know, sort of the Sondheimian method, which is like actor first who also happen to be great singer. You know, it's sort of this back and forth, whatever thing. And Billy used to say, it's both, in his Billy way. It's both. You have to be a brilliant singer and you have to be a brilliant actor. You have to be able to fuse both of these things in a musical. And that's what Eden brings. She's not just giving you vocal pyrotechnics, which there are many people who could do, but she is bringing a skill in her as an actress to this role that I think few would have the guts to do. Because it means you have to be willing to get on that stage and sing the highest notes in your range every night, and also speak the quietest words and be willing to break down, in a mess of inability to speak every night. And that is a nearly impossible task. And she's not afraid to be messy. She's not afraid that if she cracks, or if that the show isn't contingent on that. The show is contingent on a human being fighting, watching her fight through it. And that's what that brilliant human is able to do in our show every night.
Obviously, you have done the show with Eden and a large portion of this cast already. You did it out of town, but I know the last couple of weeks, or you've been in previews to have what, 12 days until opening. I'm sure that there's been a lot of work done there. How has the show changed now that you've had a Broadway audience on it? From what I heard, a little inside stuff that the show has been pretty different from night to night in terms of work that's being done, and not just changes, but like people are learning things and people are exploring things each time they get up on stage again.
Yeah, you have to do that. A musical theater is a deeply collaborative art form, and maybe the most profound collaboration in the art form is the collaboration between creatives and audience. So when the audience comes in, they're telling us what works and what doesn't work, and what's funny and what's not funny, and what songs are landing, what moments are landing, and what aren't. I had a very wise mentor, Dick Scanlon, once said to me, "There is one person who will never lie to you about your work. Your mother will lie to you, your friends will lie to you, your director will lie. Everybody's got their opinion. But the one person who will never lie to you is the audience. The audience comes in, they don't know what to expect. And like, if it's good, they're going to scream. And if it's not, they won't." And so the audience teaches us, and we then respond. They're giving us notes every night, essentially. And we respond. There are literally, the orchestra is out in the theater right now rehearsing a new song that's going in tonight.
Oh, wow.
Because I think the goal is, how do we make something that I want the audience to scream? And not for egoic reasons, but because we walk through our whole lives, on the phone, on the Instagram, just sort of in this sort of curated, controlled world. I want you to come into the theater and have a genuine experience that rocks your world. I want you to do that. Whether you love it or you hate it, I want you to go out and scream, "I love it," or, "I hate it." Whatever it is, I want you to have an experience. And that's the goal. And our job as creators is to sit in the house and sometimes painfully endure what the audience is telling us. And then there are moments where we get to revel in it and go, "We did it. We're all here together. We're all screaming. We're cheering on our lead character." That is a thrill beyond thrills. And it's something as a community of people is so special, to get to sit in a room with 1,000 people every night and all share like a common desire for that woman to succeed, for that man to succeed. That we don't, all we do is we're fighting all day online, we're fighting all day around politics, around religion, or I want to come in the theater and all hold hands and go like, "Yes, this is what we believe, this is what we want," and that's our job.
Pivoting away from what's been happening in previews and what's on stage, I have to ask, how did you get Madonna on your marketing team? Because she's been doing quite a bit for the notoriety of Tamara Ladeel and Pika over the past few months.
Thanks, Madge. It's sometimes you just like walk into the right place and right time. And that's just the truth. I think 14 years ago, when Carson and I started writing the show, there were aspects of the show that felt so true to that time. George W. Bush was the president when we started writing the show. And it and in so many ways, we were like, this show is about this time right now. And 14 years later, we've had Barack Obama, we've had Donald Trump, and now we've got Joe Biden, and just changing times, and the show feels just as, if not more, relevant now than it did when we started writing it. And I think that that is just something that's in the air. There is a common thread that I think we don't fully understand as people, but we're all sort of sharing the same kind of cosmic brainwaves somehow. Don't quote me on that, but you can just feel it. The same ideas sort of keep popping up. So Madonna's got Lempicka paintings as part, and she's always been a Lempicka fan, but she's got Lempicka paintings as part of her concert tour right now. And Barbra Streisand is writing about Lempicka in the book she just, her memoir just released. It's in the air. She's in the air. So it's the right place, right time. Thank God.
Yeah, it certainly helped. I just saw an article yesterday. Was it the New York Times mentioned both Barbara and Madonna being fans of the show? So it is certainly a moment, whether it was masterfully coordinated by your ad agency or not. It was very well done.
We'll give it to our ad agency. Thanks, ad
Yeah, of
agent.
course. Yeah, perfect. So I don't want to take too much of your time. You said they're rehearsing a new song. It's going into the show tonight. What is that like for you as a writer? Kind of like, I would imagine there's a ton of energy and nerves that go into okay, this is something that we are doing, we are putting in for a specific reason. Is this a completely from scratch kind of thing? Or is it, we've got these threads of something that came along during this 14-year process, we're going to pull them back in? What's the logistic process and then the energy, emotional process of holy crap, we've got what, 12 days until we open, we're going to try something new. And it might work, it might not, but we're going to put it out in front of hundreds, thousands, however many people are going to see it in a given day.
Thousands of people. Yes. We're gonna put out our best. Yeah, no, I first of all, this particular song is something that I think often the first impulse is often the right impulse. But the first impulse doesn't necessarily lead to the best execution necessarily. Because sometimes you have an impulse, you're like, oh, I know what this is supposed to be, and you write the thing, and you got the only way to get it out is just to write it. And you go, oh, that's not quite the right thing. And you go on a journey, and making a musical is like putting a big puzzle together. Just how do you make the pieces all fit right so that it's satisfying in the right way? And somewhere down the line, you've that first initial impulse kind of gets set to the side, and you write a new song to sort of more efficiently do the thing that first song was supposed to do. And then you were on Broadway 14 years later, and you're like, that song that we replaced the initial impulse with, something's not quite right. It's not quite answering all the questions it's supposed to answer. But we've learned something from that new song. We've learned just what has to happen in terms of just dramaturgy, storytelling. We've learned what the beat needs to be. So now we need to go back to that initial impulse that was sort of the right vibe, the right feel, the right sort of skeleton, and we need to imbue that with the beat, with the skill that went into the new song. And so we're able to take something old and kind of reinvent it into a more complete, more fully realized version of what I think we thought it could be in the first place. And sometimes that's just how you have to go. You have to write the wrong thing 10 times to go back to the first thing you wrote and go, now I know how to make that first thing right. And I think that requires either we find out we're complete idiots and we're making a huge mistake. I don't think that's the case. Or you have to kind of trust in the intuition that got the show this far. And you have to go like, I don't think I'm wrong about this. I think this is the right, and I think this is going to solve some other problems for us. And that's it. It's always a leap of faith. It's a horrifying, terrifying, scary leap of faith. But that's the only way anything new ever gets done. You got to leap. You got to jump. And if we screw up, if it's the wrong thing, we put the old song back. But I don't think it's the wrong thing. I think it's the right. And I'm listening to them practicing out there, and I'm like, yeah, that's right. That's it. There it is. There it is.
You're welcome to open the door so the rest of us can hear it as well. That would be lovely. But no, I'll give them their rehearsal time. So you talked about kind of like the idea of art versus machinery, whatever, if that is actual physical machinery or AI as we're dealing with today, a lot of the visuals we've seen from the show are these cold, dark colors. But from the way you describe this show, it's a lot about heart. It's a lot about humanity. So for people who are seeing either the actual Limpika artwork or the key art for the show and don't know anything about it, what are the emotions that they feel from the show? How are they going to connect with these characters that they might never heard of before, as everything else on the street is IP that they might be familiar with for in one way or another, whether that is actual the story or, you know, they might know the composers from popular music or something. What is the connection they're going to have with these characters in this story that they might not have going in?
I mean, I don't know that I can tell you how you're going to feel when you come in, but I think the goal is to make something that in which people can see themselves. You know, it's the goal is to tell a story, to create a series of characters in which the audience can go, I know that person. I am that person, whichever person it is. I've had that experience. And in this case, this is the story of a character who happens to be a woman, who happens to be bisexual, who's living in the circumstances of her world in her life, who is trying to have a certain kind of control over her world. And I think at the core, like, that's what it's about. Like, that's what it's about for me. I want to control my world. I want to make a show that goes to Broadway and is really successful and runs for a lot of years. And I want money and I want a war. I want all those, the trappings of success. And the truth is, and that's a dream. And being on Broadway right now, I'm living inside of a dream. But the reality is that beyond this moment, in this stuff, I don't have any control over anything. You know, 4 years ago, there was another composer launching her show the day before a pandemic shut everything down. She was inside of her dream and her dream got shut. Jonathan Larson wanted his show to go to Broadway, and the night of his opening night off Broadway, his body stopped working. And I think that, like, that is the place where, like, we all can sort of have a certain amount of insight into what this woman wanted in the beginning, the perfect marriage and the perfect life, and she had it. And then there was a revolution, and she had to flee. She had to run and start all over. And then she started painting, and she wanted, you know, to support her family, and she wanted fame, and she wanted fortune. And then the Nazis drove into Paris and, like, took all that away from her. And she moved to America, where she, you know, spent the majority of her life living in relative obscurity. And I think in so many ways, like, that is what the show is about. It's about all the ways, whether you're a writer or an artist or a mom. I'm also a dad. I have two kids, and I want my kids to have a certain life, and I want them to achieve certain things, and you don't have any control. You don't get to say how it all goes. You can try. And I think that's what people see, is like, is these people, these characters fighting, trying to not only survive, but thrive, and also having to keep on dealing with the reality that the world, when you say it's going to go this way, the world or God or whatever you believe in sort of laughs and goes, okay, how about this way instead? And that's what the show is. And I think that's what's thrilling about it. And it's about the ways that we, even when we don't get what we want, even though we don't always get to live to see the effect that our lives have had, we're here. We are making a difference. We are pushing the boulder up the hill in our little way. We are moving the conversation forward in our little ways. And there's beauty in that, and there's meaning in that, and I think that's what the show means to me. It's the little ways that we live and get to have an impact on the lives of the people around us.
I love that. That's beautiful. I will leave you there, but I am so ecstatic for all of the fact that it is on Broadway, like you said, and it is starting that journey of hopefully all of the successes that you hope in, but even more so, everybody that I have talked to that has seen the show already is just as ecstatic having seen it and is only saying the incredible things that I was hoping to hear about the show. So congratulations. I hope that everything goes well with this new song that they're currently rehearsing, and the rest of the preview process is just as successful and goes just as swimmingly, and everything else that happens will, as you said, the world will make that determination from there.
Indeed. Thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.